Circumstances have put me in touch with a series of astral experiences encountered by a man of very remarkably mixed character and mental attributes, including something not far removed from genius as a writer and poet, and, for the rest, tendencies expressing themselves in habits of life that could not but be a bar to rapid progress after passing into the next world. I regret that so many of the stories I have to tell embody, in this way, experiences that are painful for a time. But I must again emphasize the broad principle that all people who lead fairly good lives and are not intensely afflicted with unsatisfied desires of the kind that belong exclusively to the physical plane, pass on easily to pleasant conditions on the fourth sub-plane of the astral, and awake to agreeable surroundings at once. This applies, I may add, with increased emphasis, to all who have absorbed, 84, Theosophical teaching in addition to leading a good life. But to deal with the case before me. S. O. passed away under somewhat dreary conditions at the close of very distressing experiences during the last few years of physical life. These did much to alleviate what would otherwise have been even more arduous trials attending his early years on the astral. He was received on the other side by a black shrouded figure who told him to come with me. He felt that he had no option, and seemed to go upward for a time and then to be dropped down again into a sort of mist where, alone for a while, he went drearily over the leading events of his past life. They all seemed to stand out clearly, and he had the feeling of looking on at them, as it were, as though he were a spectator. Then he seemed to fall asleep, but awoke afterwards in a room at a hotel that he had known in life, one given over to vice. After experiences that I cannot venture to relate in detail, they represented aggravated conditions resembling some already dealt with in other cases. The shrouded figure reappeared and told him that he would have to remain there some time, but if he called upon the higher part of his, 85, nature, which was strong, he would hasten his escape. Eventually, though my story condenses many years of suffering, this assurance was vindicated. But at first the scene of tantalizing temptation was merely changed. It was changed several times, till once, in southern Italy, the growing sense of wearied disgust led S. O. to cry out, for God's sake, to be relieved from the ordeal. This was the beginning of relief. The shrouded figure again took charge of him, led him far on along some sort of valley, then through what seemed a long tunnel, emerging at last into daylight. I should explain that he had been in life a Roman Catholic. The person who now met him was a priest, who took him by the hand and said he had been given into his charge. He was now in a beautiful region plentifully furnished with spires and churches. He was told to rest, and recover from the strain of all he had gone through. He was tired, and went into a house where he lay down and rested, rising after a while feeling much happier. He realized that his personal appearance had reverted to the period of his best time on the physical plane. He went out, met and talked with many people, all, 86, members of the Roman Church. In the course of these talks he noticed repeatedly an appearance he found it difficult to describe. It was something like a soap bubble in a filmy human shape. Each such appearance seemed to burst, and to scatter abroad beautiful sparks of mauve and violet color, that each time had the effect of brightening the scene. S. O. was told by one very cultured man, whose acquaintance he made, that these effects were due to prayers sent up from the earth plane for the repose of the souls of unnamed people. Their substance, so to speak, was derived from a far higher plane of nature. I may add here that, since getting the information just passed on, I have been particularly asked by one, on the other side, who was an important member of the Roman Church when on earth, to be sure I duly record this interesting little item of other world news. It is certainly an interesting illustration of the way benevolent effort and good thought may bear fruit even when the exact idea inspiring it is somewhat confused. Roaming about the region in which he found himself, S. O. perceived that it was surrounded by great walls, for its protection. He was told, from evil influences raging outside. But these, 87, walls disconcerted him. He wished to explore beyond, but was urged not to do so. He could go out if he liked, but would not be able to return. Eventually, however, he insisted on going out, and was permitted to do so, passing through a sort of gateway described as luminous, mother of pearl-like, beyond which he was for a short time alone, but was then greeted by an illustrious poet who had passed on a long time before, and who took him by the hand. All that had tainted his earth life had evaporated from him. He felt clean. He came now into touch with various writers whose works he had studied in earth life, and began to look upward, so to speak, towards the Great White Lodge. These later developments, he told me, were but recently attained to, though it is now more than 20 years of our time since he left the earth body. 88. A devout priest, I wished to bring my series of narratives to a close with an example of a happy passing, and this aspiration was met by a visit procured for me from one who in life had been a devout priest of the Roman Catholic Church, an earnest ascetic who died from the effects of illness contracted during ministrations in the humblest levels of poverty in London. He remembered looking in a dreamy way at his body when he left it, and, in the same dreamy fashion, reviewing the events of his past life, a very innocent retrospect apparently. It has only been in this and the last case dealt with that mention has been made of this particular experience. I have inclined to believe that everyone had it on the threshold of the next world, but the records I have been dealing with seem to imply that it is not consciously associated with every passing. The explanation, I am told, is this: everyone, except in cases of very sudden, 89, death, has this experience, but it accrues to them before the period of unconsciousness, which is generally the prelude to a full awakening on the other side, and thus is often forgotten afterwards. My priestly friend was aware of having sunk after the review of his past life into a state of unconsciousness that lasted he did not know exactly how long, but he then awoke lying on a couch in a room surrounded by priests of his own church, who gave him a cordial welcome. He asked, was he in heaven? But without, as it seems, getting a specific reply. He was told that he had passed unconsciously through the purgatorial region where nothing remaining from his earth life had detained him. He went out, after a while, and found himself in a beautiful country surrounded by protective walls, evidently the same as that in which S.O. had emerged when set free from his long sufferings on lower levels. My priest friend, when he spoke to me, was still filled with the religious emotions of his earth life, described himself as frequently descending to lower levels to bring help to souls in prison, and did his best to win me over to the Holy Church, which he still regarded as the one avenue leading to supreme spiritual beatitude. At the 90, same time he was impressed with the belief that he would soon pass on to some higher spiritual condition in which his soul would broaden out in some way he did not yet understand. I endeavored to assure him that he would then realize how it was that I was contented with my own spiritual prospects, and did not feel the necessity of seeking refuge in the region where he was, for the time being, at peace. 91. Conclusion. The individual narratives I have been able to collect, though widely varied in their character, fall very far short of covering all the ground one seeks to explore in studying the conditions of the next world. Some of these conditions may better be dealt with in general terms. The fundamental idea to keep in mind is that people passing over do not all at once undergo any great change except so far as their surroundings have changed. As some of the stories I have been able to obtain show so clearly, occult knowledge acquired during life gives an enormous advantage to those who possess it as compared with people of quite ordinary type. It brings them rapidly into touch with representatives of the higher wisdom on the other side, and new horizons open out before them. But naturally there are multitudes who pass over without a trace of any such knowledge, and they consort, so to speak, with, 92, others of their own kind, and get used after some interval of bewilderment to conditions of life curiously resembling in many ways those by which they have been surrounded during physical life. In one region of the fourth subplane, by no means its most exalted region, people of good, commonplace religious habits of thought will be much engaged, as the devout priest's story shows, with religious exercises of the kind to which they have been accustomed down here. It must always be borne in mind that the matter of the astral world is plastic in a high degree to thought. thought there is an actually creative power, and thus there are regions of the fourth where the sustained thought power of all dwelling there has created churches and chapels in which they continue to carry on such services as they have been used to on the physical plane. As the Roman Catholic community on the other side is of course a very numerous body, the Roman Catholic cathedral in which they renew their worship is, I am assured, an enormous building far exceeding in magnitude any similar structure on the earth's surface. Going to the opposite end of the scale, the little community calling themselves Plymouth Brothers, entertaining the belief, as I understand their state of mind, that, 93, they alone are destined to be saved, find their impressions duly realized, as they think. They find themselves congregated together in something resembling a town beyond which they see nothing but an infinite waste. They continue, as in life, to hold meetings and preach each other dismal sermons, until, one by one, they get sufficiently bored, and so drift away and gradually acquire enlarged experience. Many of them may have been in ordinary life, no doubt, good and affectionate people, and then they would be exactly of the type suited to the devachanic condition, and would float off to that state of existence, when tired of their Plymouth Brother attitude of mind. The tardiness of their progress to loftier happiness would once more illustrate the fundamental principle that knowledge gained down here in advance, concerning the opportunities of the astral world, is enormously helpful in enabling people passing on to attain at once desirable conditions for which, in the absence of such knowledge, they would have to wait. Only one of the narratives with which I have been dealing in the course of this little volume has related to the after consequences of putting a violent end to one's own life down here. And the case of M. is crowded with, 94, exceptional circumstances. I have refrained from reproducing detailed stories of the sufferings or discomfort endured by people who have committed suicide in any ordinary way, because these would have overburdened the book with experiences of a painful order. After all, people who commit suicide are a small minority among us, while for the majority, leading fairly creditable and respectable lives, an appropriately rapid translation to agreeable conditions is the rule. I want my present treatise as a whole to be encouraging rather than the reverse for the kind of people likely to be its readers for the most part. I have often noticed a tendency among those who become interested in theosophical teaching to overrate the importance of their minor peccadilloes and suppose themselves incurring, on their account, more serious karma than nature really has in store for them. To judge oneself too severely may be to make a mistake on the right side, but it is a mistake nonetheless. Moreover, in contemplating astral possibilities, one should always remember that the astral life is not the period appropriate to the working out of karma. That is reserved for the next physical life, and when disagreeable or painful experiences are incurred on the astral, they are to be thought of almost always as, 95, purifying processes qualifying the personality to reach restful and happy conditions. If anyone passes over steeped in desires of a kind incompatible with life on any of the high astral levels, he must wear out those desires, subdue them or realize their worthlessness, before he can ascend to the higher levels. The attainment of such an attitude of mind may, as we have seen, be sometimes retarded to a painful degree, but in that case the protraction of the painful state should not be regarded as a karmic penalty. It automatically comes to an end as soon as the person concerned is emancipated from the characteristics that hold him back. An appreciation of this idea elucidates a question, sometimes thought to be puzzling, when we hear of the help given by entities, far advanced themselves, to people on low astral levels. That is not interference with karma, it is simply so much persuasion aimed at showing the people in trouble that they can set themselves free if they will make the necessary interior effort. Before concluding, it may be worthwhile to add a few explanations that might have been given already in connection with some of the astral experiences described, but have remained over and can perhaps better be dealt with now. 96, in general terms. Frequent mention has been made of houses in which those released from physical life find themselves on awakening beyond. Such houses are the thought creations of the persons passing on, or of those who have passed on previously and stand ready to welcome new arrivals. This detail requires further elucidation, as A. R. said, there is no gravitational stress on the astral plane. Anyone there can move about, upward or downward, by the mere effort of will. How about stairs in astral houses? Surely they cannot be needed. Nor are they needed, and yet the habits of mind brought over from physical life are so ingrained in the thinking of the newcomer in the next world, that he needlessly repeats conditions around him which resemble those he has been used to. And if a staircase seems to him a necessary adjunct to a comfortable home, his new home includes the staircase accordingly. Later on, if he works his way to higher levels than the fourth subplane, he will get altogether free of the physical life traditions. There are no houses, for instance, on the sixth subplane. The thought gives rise to flowery conditions. The denizens of that region have long since escaped from their early habits of thought. They have, 97, grown used to a life exempt from all material wants. They need neither food, shelter, nor sleep. They can luxuriate at ease in scenes of natural beauty, although it is probable that people qualified to ascend to the sixth subplane will have been developed morally to the extent of desiring to work, in some way, for the good of their fellow creatures, and will spend a large part of their time on lower levels, where they can render help to others. An interesting question arises as to the relative durability of thought creations on the astral plane. This differs very widely. Where continuous and collective thought is concentrated on the same purpose, such creations may assume a very permanent character, as for example in the Roman Catholic region of the Fourth. There the churches and houses and surrounding walls are, so to speak, very solidly built. And there are regions of the astral world which the great masters of the White Lodge reserve for their own uses, where ceremonies of initiation take place, where people passing on and already belonging to the occult world are received, if they need, as may sometimes be the case, rest and recuperation after trying experiences in physical life. Here the appropriate structures are rendered very, 98, definitely permanent by adept power, and are not infrequently visited during physical life by occult pupils able to get about freely on the astral plane during sleep. On the other hand, the dream houses, or rather the dream rooms, created for themselves by people of quite ordinary type in passing over, assuming that such persons have no disagreeables to encounter, would not be durable at all, would only serve a brief purpose, and would melt away when the inhabitant, as on the hypothesis he or she would be soon likely to do, float off into the unconscious rest preceding translation to the devachanic state. I do not suggest for a moment that the astral experiences I have been recording, or the imperfect explanations just added to them, come near exhausting the manifold varieties of condition involved in the opportunities of astral life. Some of these, especially on the higher levels, are practically beyond physical plane comprehension. Thus on the fifth subplane, the intellectual region, it seems possible for the literary student to help himself to copies of any book in existence down here, whether of ancient or of recent origin. And I believe that men of science on the fifth level can somehow make use of laboratories, though their new, 99, methods of research no doubt involve the use of faculties that generally supersede the necessity for using such instruments of research as they have been used to in the lower life. I know that they acquire knowledge concerning the constitution of matter, the mysteries of force, gravitation, and electricity that no instruments of ordinary research would help them to. And the vast spaces of the solar system and beyond become accessible, in some way we cannot here understand, to the investigations of the occult astronomer. That does not mean that superlative wisdom is poured into their consciousness in a flood. The new knowledge is gradually acquired as here by study and continuous effort, but it is acquirable in new ways for the full comprehension of which we who are interested in such work will mostly have to wait. Finally, it seems desirable to deal in a few words with an idea that may arise in the minds of some theosophical students concerning the investigations with which this little volume has been concerned. In the beginning of theosophical study, an impression arose that it was wrong to get into communication with people on the astral plane, because it was assumed that in all cases the all-important idea, 100, Connected with them was that they should pass on without delay to the loftier existence described as Devajan. To seek intercourse with them was to tie them down to earth, and so on. Our present fuller knowledge of the whole subject dissipates this notion altogether. It is true that there might be peculiar cases in which people incapable of profiting by the life of the higher astral levels might be just sinking into the sleep preceding translation to the Devachanic state, and would thus be prejudiced if they could be awakened. But the mere opportunities of spiritual mediumship would not awaken them. The fear that by loving thoughts of departed dear ones we may drag them down to the earth plane is almost entirely delusive. It is only while they are wide awake that they could feel the attractive strain, and in such cases they would not be in the least degree prejudiced by responding to it. There are reasons why it is, as a rule, undesirable to attempt by means of commonplace spiritual mediumship to get into touch with departed friends. The liability to astral deception in connection with such efforts being very serious. The lower levels of the astral plane swarm with entities who find it amusing to personate anyone whom the sitters at a seance may seek to, 101, get in touch with, and they can readily pick up from the thoughts of the person sitting, enough information to make the personation plausible. The narratives I have been enabled to pass on in the preceding pages have been obtained under such peculiar conditions that they are exempt from this risk. For various reasons it is impossible for me to be more explicit, and I can only leave the records I have put before my readers to be taken or left as they may think fit, content to suggest that my long and loyal devotion to the task of interpreting the teachings of the great adept masters may afford my readers some ground for assuming that in the present case I am likely to have been provided with abnormal facilities for carrying out this little piece of work, the importance of which is perhaps of an order of magnitude far greater than can be measured by the number of pages required for its fulfillment. Page 102, final underscore, footnote. 1, word definition dash costermonger, Old English term for, a street seller of fruit and vegetables from a wheelbarrow or wheeled market stall, common in turn of the century London, and considered of low social class in Victorian England. Dash.